right, welcome to another edition of Texans Talk, brought to you by U.S. Today Sports Group. I'm Mark Lane, joined by Chris Knowles, one of the excellent writers that we have on staff at the Texans Wire, and he joins us now. Chris, hey, it's good to talk to you finally.
Absolutely. You too, Mark. So excited to be here, bud.
Yeah, well, how excited do you think Texans fans are about the prospect of trading for or signing, when he becomes available, Pittsburgh Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell?
As a Texans fan myself, I think everybody should be on board and excited for this potential move. I know ESPN came out with a report saying that they predict the Texans to sign Le'Veon Bell. I 100% am on board with this. In terms of it happening, I think it's 50-50. I think the Texans have more than enough cap space available to sign Le'Veon Bell and or trade. Yes, they do have some holes in their offensive line, but, you know, their cap space right now, it looks at $62 million, a little north of that. And I really think they have a good shot at landing Bell. I wouldn't have said that with Rick Smith at the helm, but with what Brian Gain has come in and already done with the aggressive moves of signing Tyrann Mathieu, trading for Demaryius Thomas, I think Gain is ready to make an impact. And I think the Texans' chances are very high of signing Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is if they did bring in someone like Bell, the problem is that you'd still have the same offensive line issues, because that's what happened to the Texans' run game starting in Week 14, was it just dropped off the map. I mean, it's a bad thing. Even as athletic and talented as Deshaun Watson is, it's a bad thing when he is your leading rusher in three out of the four last games of the season. So that's I don't think they should trade for Bell, because it could compromise their ability to bolster the offensive line. I think they should wait and see if he makes it to free agency and then court him with everything that you've got.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I agree with that. I think guys, speaking of Tyrann Mathieu, you know, J.J. Watt sent out a tweet to Tyrann Mathieu as soon as he was released from the Cardinals last offseason. I know a lot of players have good relationships with DeAndre Hopkins and Watson. I think the Texans have that kind of swag about them now with the players that are on this roster that can court somebody like Le'Veon Bell. And I think Le'Veon Bell would fit in Houston. Yes, the offensive line needs addressing, and I think they will address that this offseason. But I do think getting Bell, it's not a luxury, it's not a must-have, but it is something that I think could put the Texans to the next level.
Yeah, because look at what they were able to do with Lamar Miller and an offensive line that was objectively worse than the one he had in 2016 when he posted a 1,000-yard rushing season. He almost had the same kind of season behind an objectively worse offensive line. So that's where some of the optimism comes in bringing someone like Bell. And I think some of the star power that the Texans have acquired is largely due to the guy under center in Deshaun Watson. When he commands the locker room, I mean, earns the respect, rather, of the locker room with guys like DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney and even Tyrann Mathieu, saying that's one of the reasons why he wants to come back, I think that adds to the star power that the Texans are accumulating.
Yes, 100% agree. I think the players in the NFL know that Deshaun Watson's special, and Deshaun Watson can help propel the Texans to that next level. And that wasn't the case for many years.
Well, here we are. We're about 5 minutes into the podcast, and it's just like with the articles that we write. There's invariably in the comments someone saying, who cares? What does it matter? The offensive line is atrocious, so that needs to be addressed first. Who cares about anything else to do with the team because the offensive line is so bad? That's always my favorite.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, dude.
And this is brought to this delay and talk and cacophony brought to you by Skype. Go ahead, Chris.
I mean, there's multiple ways that they can address, you know, this offensive line. And the fact that, you know, the Texans have 2 second round picks, as well as the cap space, they're more than capable of getting this offensive line fixed this offseason. And I know that's going to be one of their top priorities. They're going to rebuild this thing, especially on the, right side. I thought it was crazy how they had Mankins switched over to left tackle last year. It was just comical last year, but I think it's going to get definitely fixed this offseason.
Yeah. Everyone has them taking a tackle, whether it's Dalton Risner, whether it's someone of that caliber. But I think they should be open with that 23rd overall pick into even taking a guard if it comes to it. What do you think?
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. I'm not a big fan of taking offensive linemen in the first round, but where the Texans are in terms of picking at 23, if I believe that's correct, you've got your skill player, your skill players, the skill position players, intact right now to where you can go ahead and move on an offensive lineman, in the first round. But if someone like a cornerback of Greedy Williams level is there, I'm okay with passing on that offensive lineman coming back in the second round and nabbing it, considering you have two second round draft picks.
Exactly. And that's also why it's an optimistic time for the Texans front office, is you saw what Gain did with a trio of third round picks to start off his career as general manager for the Texans. And he gets Justin Reed, who was, I think, if he could have finished, you know, if the Texans would have finished maybe with a first-round bye or something like that, he would have had the notoriety to get some Rookie of the Year votes. But it didn't happen that way. But nonetheless, that's who Gain was able to bring in with a third-round pick. What's he going to do with a first and a second-round pick? And I think that would create some leeway to where they could address cornerback with maybe a first-round pick. But regardless, those first two picks, one of them has got to be used on the offensive line, because you have to have somebody that will be able to complement Martinez Rankin, who they took in the third round last year.
Yeah, definitely, 100% agree. If they fail to sign a offensive lineman in the free agency like last year when New York Giants came in and overbid severely for Nate Solder, which I was very happy the Texans did not do that deal, by the way. Draft is going to be where the Texans and Brian Gain especially is going to shine this year. I agree with getting Justin Reed in the third. The Texans have a first and 2 seconds. I mean, that's you have a lot of wiggle room too. I mean, you can package that second up and maybe move back into the first round. I mean, there's so much more possibilities. In terms of what you can do there, and it gives Brian Gain a little bit more wiggle room in this year's draft. So, yeah, I definitely think they are going to make a move, in especially the first or second round for an offensive lineman.
Yeah, and with that acquisition of talent, though, yeah, I think one of the problems that no one is really talking about except here on Texas Talk is Mike Devlin's still going to be coaching them. You know, this is the guy who oversaw the second worst offensive line. It's not fair to say it that way. He was a part of an offensive line that allowed the second most sacks in 2017. Part of the offensive line that had the most sacks given up in 2018. What's to say? I mean, why? How does he become a better coach all of a sudden just because they give him the resources? That's my concern.
Yeah, I definitely see that. I think this coaching staff that Bill O'Brien and especially Mike Devlin, it's really weird to me, in my personal opinion. I think it's a group of buddies that O'Brien has brought up through his own personal rankings. I'm not a big fan of it. I don't want to say joke is to be too harsh, but there's maybe it's an arrogance on O'Brien's part, but I'm sorry, these coaches that he's brought in, like Mike Devlin, promoting Tim Kelly as the offensive coordinator, who was a tight ends coach. I think what needs to happen is some outside help come in here that have, you know, that has a different perspective and give some new insight to Bill O'Brien, because and you know this as much as anyone, I'm not a fan of Bill O'Brien in terms of how he calls the offensive plays. I'm not a fan of the coaching staff. I just think it's a joke. I think Bill O'Brien needs to – I'm not going to say it's arrogance, but, man, it sure seems like it is. He's just not given the reins to outside personnel. I mean, why not Mike McCarthy? I mean, I understand he may have failed where he was at previously, but, man, I mean, the guy can call offensive plays, you know. I think there's a number of things he could have done differently, but it just seems to be, if you've been through the college ranks with Bill O'Brien, he's going to bring you on with him to the NFL like he has, and he's going to make you, even though you know you were this at one point in your career, he's going to promote you to offensive coordinator. I don't agree with it. I don't like anything that he's done, and I don't think Mike Devlin has done a very good job. That's pretty obvious. I would have fired him after this season, but, you know, that's Bill O'Brien football for you.
Right, and Devlin and Kelly, incidentally, right. With Romeo Crennel, are a part of that. They're a part of this support system that Bill O'Brien has. It was interesting in the final press conference to wrap up the season. He mentioned, because they asked, who are some coaches that you lean on? And he's like, well, of course, Romeo Crennel. And then he threw out Mike Devlin. And when he threw out Mike Devlin, I was like, well, he's not going anywhere. And then he threw out Tim Kelly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, the tight ends coach, Tim Kelly, who was an offensive quality control coach in 2014 till he got the crack in 2017. Okay, there's a name to watch out for then. Is Tim Kelly. And then lo and behold, he gets promoted to offensive coordinator. Real quickly, just going to run through these for our listeners. Tim Kelly's the offensive coordinator, as you heard. Danny Barrett remains running backs coach. Mike Devlin, the offensive line coach. Will Lawing, who was an offensive assistant, now becomes tight ends coach. John Perry is the receivers coach. Carl Smith from the Seattle Seahawks is now the quarterbacks coach. T.J. Yates is an offensive assistant along with John Aylward. So we'll go ahead and pick through the rest of these offensive coaching signings. What did you make of bringing in Carl Smith, the guy who's been there for every season of Russell Wilson's career.
I thought that was probably the best move he's made in terms of a hire on his coaching staff. I think Carl Smith, considering where he was in Seattle with Russell Wilson, coming over here working with now Deshaun Watson, they're very, very similar quarterbacks. You know, can escape the pocket. They can also sit in the pocket. That's the one move I do like. I'm a big fan of that one, and I think Carl Smith is going to do excellent here if Bill O'Brien kind of leaves him alone and lets him do his thing with Deshaun. As far as, like, you know, TJ Yates, I don't know what it is with the Texans, but they like to have at least a player either from the Texans or Bill O'Brien's old teams on the staff for some reason. I'm not really sure why that is, but I wasn't a big fan of the TJ Yates move, but I do really like the Carl Smith move. I think that's going to help Deshaun a lot this year.
Yeah, I do too, because he'll be able to develop Deshaun's ability to stay in the pocket and become a better passer, as opposed to scrambling around, which, you know, he does to set up bigger passes, but still going through his, because that's what Russell Wilson had a trouble with in his first 2 to 3 seasons. It wasn't until 2015 when he started to become a more downfield threat and utilize his scrambling ability to set up bigger plays. That TJ Yates move is going to be interesting to see if they brought him in because maybe, but I can't see it being this way because Deshaun was injured his rookie season when TJ Yates was playing, but he was still kind of on the roster, I think. I wonder if they brought him in for Deshaun because he likes what he, you know, they think he can help Deshaun Watson in some way. I don't know. But you know, that's great for Bill O'Brien to develop younger coaches like that. And as you said, coaches, I think this is the first time that all of the previous players were actually Texans and not expatriates.
Yeah, that was one thing I noticed too when they announced TJ Yates. Another name that stood out for me, I don't know if you noticed, but Akeem Dent,
yes,
as the defensive assistant. I thought that was pretty interesting. And then of course, you know, the Brian Cushion as the strength coach. You know, I thought that was kind of a funny one, but you know.
He's going to have,
but as the strength coach, interesting.
Yeah, Cushing's going to help J.J. Moses out with player development, too. So, like, rookie orientation and stuff. Here's Brian Cushing. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, agree.
The defensive assistant, Romeo Crennel, remains defensive coordinator, assistant head coach. Akeem Dent, as Chris referred to, he's a defensive assistant. Bobby King remains inside linebackers coach. Danton Lynn, assistant secondary. Anthony Midget, secondary coach. Matt O'Donnell, defensive assistant. John Pagano, senior defensive assistant with outside linebackers. And then Anthony Weaver, still coaching the defensive line. Brad Seeley, the special teams coordinator. And then, well, Chris, did you know this? Tracy Smith, the assistant special teams coordinator, is the son of Carl Smith. Did you know that? I didn't even know that.
No, I did not know that. No.
Yeah. So that. So
father, did not know.
There you go. So father and son duo right there. This is a defensive staff that couldn't figure out how to stop. Could not figure out how to stop T.Y. Hilton in 3 games. And nearly got beat by Sam Darnold and the Jets in December. Are you happy with any of the with retaining the bulk of this defensive staff?
I like Crennel. I do like Crennel, but I noticed that Crennel's scheme is based off of it's okay to play a little off man, meaning they're okay with giving up 10, 15 yards as long as you don't give up the big play. And that's a large part due to having an elder cornerback like Jonathan Joseph, and guys that can't match speed for speed with wide receivers like T.Y. Hilton, for instance. I think with getting some new cornerbacks, that'll help. But I'm going to give Romeo Crennel and this defensive staff at least one more year, because I think he can improve on it. But I just, for whatever reason, I hope they play more man and get the personnel in terms of cornerbacks in there to address that issue. I think that was one of the biggest issues last season.
Yeah, they had the rug pulled out from under them with Kevin Johnson getting that concussion. And then, so they were lucky in a way to have Kareem Jack for the safety situation to stabilize with Justin Reed assuming that role. Then you can take Kareem Jackson and slide him to the outside and help out Jonathan Joseph. But yeah, there really weren't any. But they signed Aaron Colvin. But that ankle injury he sustained in week four against the Colts, decimated the cornerback core a little more because he wasn't available, and O'Brien in the final season presser explained that injury was partly why they didn't rotate him in more even after he recovered from the injury. Then they bring in Sharice Wright and Kayvon Webster. Yeah, it just didn't work out. And that's the thing. Of that $64.4 million, according to Over the Cap, that's some of the salary cap space they're going to have to devote is to the cornerback position. And hey, maybe that makes Romeo Crennel look like an improved defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I think they definitely have to squeeze some cornerbacks in there in pre-agency or during the draft. One guy I was taking a look last night that caught my eye was Jason Verrett from the Chargers. I think he's a name I would like to see on this Texans team. But I also am a big fan of Greedy Williams. I just think they need to retool that group. And I'm okay with them releasing Kevin Johnson and Jonathan Joseph. I definitely would like them to resign Kareem Jackson. I'm sorry. I think he really did well at the safety position when he played safety. But since pretty much all the cornerbacks were hurt last season, they had to put him back over to cornerback, where he kind of, he played good. He wasn't the best cornerback per se, but I think he was a pretty darn good safety for the Texans when he was over there beginning of the season.
Yeah, he really was, and he did a good job. And he is one of two free agents that they're really going to have to make a decision on. We all know who the other one is, and that's Jadeveon Clowney. General Manager Chris Knowles, what would you do with Jadeveon Clowney?
Find every way to retain him. If that's tagging, work out a longer contract after that, or sign him to a long-term deal now. I definitely think they need to retain him. JJ's not going to be there that much longer. I think JJ has been in the league for what, maybe 7-8 years, I think now.
Yes.
I want to say.
Yes.
8 years. He's 29, and we all know JJ Watt plays at a high motor. He's been injured quite frequently, although he was healthy last season. I think Clowney is someone they have to keep. They have to be prepared for when Watt leaves, and not saying that he's not going to be here for another year or two, but I definitely think you need to tie up Clowney now. He's just too good of a player. He really shines when Watt was injured. He can handle the load, and I would do everything I can to keep Clowney today.
some interesting dates to watch out for. February 19th is when it's when they begin when teams can begin applying the franchise tag and the transition tag. So that's when you'd start watching for if they tag Clowney. March the 5th at 3 p.m. is when teams declare that they are going to tag a player. But it really, if you're going to lock someone up to a multi-year deal, that's not, you know, that doesn't really mean anything. Actually, that's kind of like on tax extensions when you file and say that you'll do it in August as opposed to April. So it doesn't really mean anything. At that point, let's say they want to tag Clowney. It's actually July 15th at 3 p.m. Central Time when you need to watch out, because if Clowney and the Texans don't get something worked out by then Clowney plays under the tag no matter what, and they cannot negotiate until the 2020 offseason. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens with the whole Jadeveon Clowney situation. According to Pro Football Talk, who's at it again, and over the cap, Clowney, we have it on Texans Wire. They said that he is going to be the most expensive free agent in 2019. So Jason Fitzgerald from Over the Cap thinks that Clowney would get a 6-year, $135 million deal with $85 million guaranteed.
Yeah, I definitely, after seeing what, you know, I think, wasn't it Khalil Mack?
Yes.
Signing? Is that accurate? Yeah, I think Clowney would definitely get something similar to that deal. I think the Texans in game should do that. Absolutely. Maybe that not that exact figure, but I think they need to come to terms on locking him up. I think Clowney's just that guy. He's right there in terms of talent, in my opinion. And I think the Texans need to do everything they can to keep him. They've got the cap space. They've been saving this cap space up for a little while now. Now they need to make magic happen. They have the quarterback. Let's go out and build and get things for this team and franchise to succeed and reach the next level, and that's hopefully go to the Super Bowl next year.
Yeah, and you especially have to act and use that cap space when you've got Deshaun Watson on the Chiefs, because when it comes time for the Watson contract, yeah, you're pretty much going to be cap strapped at that point, no matter how good you've been managing contracts. So you better win now.
Exactly. Look what it's done to you know, Green Bay when Aaron Rodgers signed. I mean, you know, I would say the one team that worked out for the best, in my opinion, is probably down here in New Orleans, the Saints. You know, having Breeze under that contract, but they've done a really good job over the last couple of years getting guys like Kamara and Ramshack and guys like that to help. But yeah, it makes it a lot difficult when you've got an all-star quarterback, an all-pro quarterback in there that you're going to have to pay a pretty high price for.
Yeah, and what helped New Orleans was their drafting. Their drafting finally got better. The Jeff Ireland effect finally kicked in, and they were able to, like you said, get Kamara, Cam Jordan, and that's what also helps. That's one way that you can get through a cap hell. The one way you can pray your way through cap hell is to really nail your draft class.
Yeah, I think you know, drafting is one of the key components to winning and being successful. And, you know, the Texans, and I'll even give Rick Smith credit here. He's done pretty good with the first round, even sometimes the second round. But it's the rest of those drafts, the depth of those drafts that have really hankered the Texans for quite a few years. But in terms of first-round talent, I mean, well, pretty much all of the Texans' talent is first-round, if you really think about it. Hopkins, Watson, Watt, Clowney. You know, that's been where they have been successful. It's just the depth, and it even shows on the field too, the lack of depth that we have on this team. And even in the past, that's kind of what always hurts us. But yeah, I definitely think drafting is going to be a huge part of the Texans' success in 2019.
We've touched on this a little bit, but nonetheless, just to get it on the record for those that are listening to Texans Talk, I'm Mark Lane, joined by Chris Knowles, who's going to tell us what needs to be done with this aging cornerback duo.
Yeah, Mark, the first thing I would do, I would do the tough call here, and I would release Jonathan Joseph. I would re-sign Kareem Jackson. I would try to, like I mentioned before, reach out to Jason Verrett from the Chargers, who's a free agent. I would release Kevin Johnson and try to work the draft. Like I said, and we've mentioned before, you know, the Texans have a first round and 2 second round draft picks. There's some talented corners in this upcoming draft. And one particular, like I've said before, and I'll say it again, I like Greedy Williams from LSU. He's solid, and I would like him to play with a guy like Verrett, or having Kareem Jackson being on that other side or being the leader at the helm for the cornerback position until maybe next year draft another cornerback. But yeah, I would say get the old out, Joseph. Although Kevin Johnson's not necessarily old, we've kind of seen enough of Kevin Johnson. I don't want to see guys like Sharice Wright and Kayvon Webster in there. I would keep Colvin. I think Colvin has all the potential in the world. I think he's a solid cornerback. I just don't think he had a lot of opportunities with his injuries last year. But that's my take, and that's kind of what I would do with it. I like Jonathan Joseph, but I think it's time to get a fresh start back there.
Yeah, and they have to use one of those first two draft picks, I think, on cornerback, and they have to use some of that cap space. Now, with Kareem Jackson, you know, I think you got to say adios, even though he did have a good year. But it's the fact he's going to turn 31 on April 25th that you got to say goodbye, because you don't want to give him a contract and then he doesn't live up to it. Not, you know, because he's a bum, but just because he's, you know, he's finally aged. That's the problem I have with Kareem Jackson is he could be too old and you'd be locking him up. But he does mean a lot to the locker room. That's the other thing too, is I would just worry about him being a progress stopper, and that's why I wouldn't bring Jackson back and would just couch it to, well, that's the nature of pro football. That's the business of pro football.
Yeah, no. I guess if you weren't to go with Kareem Jackson, you know, Mark, who would be your ideal replacement for him? I definitely wouldn't want Kevin Johnson trying to hold that down. Let's reverse it and they keep Jonathan Joseph and they do let Jackson go. Who steps into that role?
Oh, my gosh. I would much prefer to have Jackson than Joseph, you know, just because I don't think you can keep rolling with an aging with aging cornerbacks like that. That's just the problem.
Yeah.
Colvin, they've got to get some use out of Colvin because of the commitment they made to it. They brought him in and they wanted him to play outside, yet they still tried to play him inside like the Jaguars did. I just don't feel like in year one, even with the injuries, that they really tried to use Aaron Colvin. And they've got to find a way in year two.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Colvin is someone they definitely need to keep and get more opportunity. I think he will be successful. You know, I'm on spotrac.com right now, and I'm looking just through some names here of cornerbacks, and nothing really pops out at me right now, and I'm looking for guys that are relatively young, but there are many out there. You know, you've got guys like Pierre Desir, but he's 28 years old. You know, a guy like I kept mentioning was Jason Verrett. He's 28. But I'm not seeing anybody that really just jumps out at me. Maybe possibly like a Morris Claiborne. You know, he played pretty well there for the Jets last season. But I don't know if the Texans are going to find that number one cornerback. Although, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the Instagram post that Deshaun Watson and Jaguars cornerback Jalen Ramsey were kind of talking a little bit, made a little interesting as if maybe per se Ramsey should join the Texans. I don't know how you feel about that and if that's even a possibility.
You'd have to trade. You'd have to give up draft capital to get him, but that would be an answer to the problem.
Yeah. Would you trade Clowney?
No.
For Jalen Ramsey? No.
No. I'd sign Clowney. I think that it's too, I think that you've got to utilize everything that you've got. I just don't think you can get into any more trades right now because the trade is what got you Deshaun Watson and it worked. You have to recover from that, even though it worked. That's just my organizational philosophy from having sat on the couch and eaten Cheetos and gulped coffee while watching football.
No, yeah, definitely. Would you maybe use one of those second rounders? I don't know if that would even be enough to pry Jalen Ramsey enough away from the Jaguars. But would you use one of those second number two draft picks?
Yeah, if they think that his talent has devalued to that point, yeah, it'd be worth it because it's kind of like the Amari Cooper situation with the Cowboys, and you know, not to gross out the audience, just so. But that was the thinking was, if we take our 2019 first round pick and use it on Amari Cooper, that is getting a better deal out of that draft pick than any receiver that we took in the draft class. And Amari Cooper's just like 24 years old. So it's the same thing with Jalen Ramsey is you for sure could get a better, you could, with Jalen Ramsey's talent with a second round pick, you could get a better deal than you could with anyone that you're going to take at cornerback in the second round in the 2019 NFL draft. Oh, and he'll just be 25 in October. So it's also an age thing, too. So, if the Jags are dumb enough, then I for sure would send a second to get him. I'm just saying I wouldn't say, a first, a third, and a seventh. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely wouldn't give up a huge package for him. But I found it very interesting. There was sort of this defunct going on with the Jags there, with Fournette and then Ramsey being classified as somewhat of a diva or problem maker. There was something definitely going on in that locker room last season. And I think if the Texans could probably exploit that a little bit and say, hey, you know, we'll give you a second round pick for Ramsey. Maybe they would do it. I don't know. They need a quarterback. It's pretty obvious. You know, I would definitely call. I would definitely inquire about it. That's for sure. If it was even a possibility. But if I'm the Jags and if I even, you know, had that offer, I would probably say no straight up. But if I'm the Texans, I would at least ask, just to see.
Yeah, I think the Jaguars' problems were related to losing. I think that when they start winning, no one's gonna in the locker room and. At the building, let me put it this way: Jason Lockenfor is not going to have much to report on. Let me just say that if they start winning, I think it was one of those issues that caused all the drama.
Yeah, I don't see them winning very often, and I'm not trying to get onto a Jaguars rant, but I just don't see their problems being solved anytime soon with Blake Bortles at the helm.
Yeah.
But, you know, the draft is coming up.
Well,
see what happens.
I think we've grossed out the listeners enough with me mentioning the Dallas Cowboys and then us talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars. So let's quickly get them back in before they just give up on the podcast altogether. You know, you're a native Houstonian, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Born and raised.
Okay, so you're a little older than me, so it'd be fair to say that you remember Warren Moon and the Houston Oilers and the Astrodome and all and Buddy Ryan coming in as defensive coordinator with Jack Pardee's staff in 93 with Kevin Gilbride as offense. You remember all that stuff, right? You have at least on your memory engrams in Grant. You know, ingrained that all of those feelings and the optimism and excitement of the Oilers, right?
Yeah.
Is Deshaun Watson then the greatest quarterback in the city of Houston since Warren Moon?
You know, that's a good question. I think Watson gives Houston and its fans hope. I think he gives us a lot of hope because of our starvation for a quarterback. We've been longing for someone to come in and save the franchise. The greatest quarterback, you know, I would have to say he's definitely on the right path. Not quite there yet, but man, I will 100% give you that he will be. I do believe that, and that's just two seasons in. But he gives us hope. He's what will save the Texans, in my opinion. He's going to save this franchise. You know, watching the Texans since they first were born, pretty much, you know, we've gone through some pretty bad quarterbacks. But Watson, he's different. And every time you watch a Texans game, you don't cringe every time the quarterback has the ball in their hand. You're almost like, what's he going to do next? But Watson is the hope for the franchise. He is the franchise, in my opinion. But the greatest in Houston football over a span, no, not yet, not yet. But he will be there. I definitely believe he will be there.
Okay, so since 1994, who's been a better quarterback than Deshaun Watson in Houston NFL history?
I would have to. Oh man, you know, one name that keeps coming up is Steve McNair.
McNair was there.
He was pretty good, man.
He was there for two seasons, yeah.
What's that?
He was there for two seasons,
he was pretty good. Now, that's the part. That's the part you have to deal with is, you know, he was a Houston Oiler, but then they went on to you know, of course, became our rivals in Tennessee as the Titans. But I would say Steve McNair was pretty darn good. A little known fact about me, and I don't like to tell people this a whole bunch, but when I was a small child, my favorite quarterback of all time was Troy Aikman. You know, my family is huge Dallas Cowboy fans. So we grew up not watching the Oilers. It was the Cowboys, you know, and watching Troy Aikman, he was my favorite. So I did like Warren Moon, but in terms of the best quarterback ever in Houston, I would have to give that steal to Warren Moon. But that will change by the time Deshaun Watson's career is over in Houston.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Watson is greater than Warren Moon. My contention is that he's better than 95-96 McNair. He's better than whoever they had. Cody Carlson in 94, I think. He's better than, for sure, David Carr. Better than Matt Schaub. Better than Brock Osweiler. Just you name them, bring them out there. He's even better than Ryan Mallett,
yeah.
Former Arkansas Razorback.
TJ Yates.
Yeah.
Yeah, TJ. Yeah, TJ Yates is better than Brock Osweiler. That's a given.
Yeah. So that's all I'm saying is that I think that Deshaun Watson, right now, I think he's the greatest since Warren Moon. By the way, speaking of Houston NFL quarterbacks, tonight, well, I shouldn't do that. It dates the podcast. Wednesday night, Dan Pastorini was inducted into the Houston Sports Hall of Fame, that former Oilers quarterback who led Houston to two consecutive AFC championship games against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Unfortunately, they were bested twice by the Steelers at Three River Stadium in the 78 and 79 AFC title games. But we just want to congratulate him, Dan Pastorini, on his induction into the Houston Sports Hall of Fame on Wednesday night.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's awesome, man. Yeah, Dan Pastorini, Houston legend. That's an awesome achievement for him. And congratulations to him, for sure.
Yep. All right, well, we're approaching the end of the podcast. Anything else that we didn't touch on, Chris, that you'd like the listeners to know about?
No, man. You can definitely, other than catching our work at TexansWire.com, always give our articles a good read and give us some good follows, I guess.
You can follow Chris on Twitter at ChrisNallsNFL, and there still is time, by the way, if you're listening to this, and it is not Saturday at 11 a.m. Central. You can still send him material, your questions, on Twitter, on Facebook, at hashtag AskTexans. Just do it on Twitter. It's easier that way. Hashtag AskTexansWire. And Chris will answer them. He'll do it every Saturday at 11 a.m. It's a great tradition that he started near the end of the 2018 campaign, and we're going to keep it going, kind of like Texans talk. We're going to keep it going just because there aren't any games being played that are NFL-related. I don't want any of those AAF boys telling us that there's still football being played. But, no, seriously, we'll be talking about the Texans all year long. For us, Texans season never ends on Texans Talk. It was good to catch up with you, Chris, and we'll see everybody next week.
See you later, guys.